Good morning and welcome to the East Tennessee Report, a public affairs program of the Journal Broadcast Group. My name is Frank Murphy. This morning, we're once again delighted to have the writing team of Jefferson Bass, John Jefferson, and Dr. Bill Bass here to talk about their latest novel, the Jefferson Bass novel, The Devil's Bones. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
And Dr. Bass.
Good morning, Frank.
Welcome back to the show.
Thanks.
Thank you, sir.
Well, congratulations on novel number three in the Dr. Bill Brockton series.
Thank you. Thank you. The Body Farm novels.
Yeah. Terrific. This one called The Devil's Bones for a reason, because there's a recurring theme throughout, guys.
It's based on the investigation of fires and fire deaths.
Yeah.
That's why we called it.
There's cremation in this book. There's both intentional and unintentional. And a newsworthy story that I'm sure everyone listening will recall, a reference to the crematorium down in Georgia that really did a bad job of...
or did no job. Yeah.
So we'll talk about that a bit as well, and as well as some just general questions I've got about cremation versus burial and all sorts of things that we'll be talking about this morning. Dr. Bass, of course, is known here as the founder of the Body Farm at the University of Tennessee, the anthropology research facility.
We call it ARF.
Yeah. And I, last weekend, in preparation for our conversation, went down to the McClung Museum and saw a tremendous display.
I've seen it a couple times.
Your successors have curated this exhibit.
Dr. Lee Jantz and Dr. Mary Marks are the two that put that together.
Mm-hmm.
It's a real good display on the forensic anthropology area. It goes into how you determine age and sex and race and stature.
Mm-hmm. So the skeletons that I saw on display there, or the bones I saw on display there, are from your collection?
They're from, yes, right. They're from the university, the collection at the University of Tennessee.
So those people were all, had donated their bodies for the most part to the Body Farm? And
they are both forensic cases and from bodies that were donated, that's right.
Okay. And you can see, and in fact, you guys have written in all your books, including the nonfiction book that came out last year, Beyond the Body Farm, about the difference in the skull of a male and a female. And that's something that I read and I kind of never really understood, but I got to actually see it firsthand when you talk about the difference in the eyebrow ridge in the male and the female skull.
That's one of the good things about that display. There's not a lot of writing, and you can see it actually. I mean, they describe, and you can see it without a great amount of explanation of what goes on.
So do check the McClung Museum on the campus of the University of Tennessee. Admission is free, and it's open. In fact, even this afternoon, you can go down and take a look if you'd like. Now, John, when you were putting together with Dr. Bass the next in your series of Body Farm books, what was your thought process in thinking, well, where do we take the story now? I mean, Dr. Brockton has been through quite a bit in the first two books. I mean, he's not had it easy.
No, he hasn't. We always start with what we want to do forensically. What kind of forensic science do we want the plot to hinge on? And as we were talking about ideas, kicking around ideas, one of the first things we realized was, well, we haven't done anything with fire yet.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, since the Noble Georgia cremation case, Dr. Bass has worked on a lot of cremation cases. He and I went down there while I went down with him right after that case broke, when everybody who was involved in all the lawsuits that stemmed from that got a chance to go in and actually inspect the grounds.
In the book, Dr. Brockton is hired by a law firm to investigate one set of remains.
Right.
Dr. Bass, were you also hired for that particular case in Georgia, or did you go down as an observer?
I went down because I had already been asked to look at a case or two.
So there's some truth in fiction.
I guess is what I'm driving at there.
In the first book we had,
Death's Acre.
Death's Acre mm-hmm. has a chapter on a man named Chigger Hardin, who was from Southeast Tennessee, and when he died, his body was sent down there, and the family got back cremains, and they held on to him because there was some question in the family of what to do, and then the news broke that, hey, there are all these bodies out there, and so they began to worry, and they wondered if the cremations they had returned to them were actually Chigger Hardin's remains.
Mm-hmm.
And to make a long story short, they were not. Chigger Hardin's body was found and was made a positive identification. Then the family asked me again if John and I would take a look at the body, and they decided to have it cremated, and we decided to cremate it up here.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of interesting because when Chigger was a teenager, he and his brother were playing a card game one night, and his brother thought Chigger was cheating, so he picked up a pistol and shot him in the chest.
Oh, no.
So he had this .22 caliber lead slug in his chest, fairly close to his heart, that the orthopedic surgeon of the surgeon decided that we just leave it in there.
So when he's cremated,
he carried that around in his body for, 25 years or so?
Yeah, something like that.
So by the time he gets around to being cremated, that should turn up in the urn.
Exactly. And it wasn't there in what the family got back from Noble, Georgia.
What did they get back? Was it actually someone else's ashes, or was it just a bag of dirt?
Difficult question to answer, except that I've looked at 28 of the cremains from the Noble Georgia Crematory, and all of them have some human bone in them. Also, three of them had animal bone in them, and the majority of the material is probably filler. They only got back about half of what you would normally expect to get in a cremation.
When you say animal bone, are we talking like he went out for barbecue and some ribs or what?
No, these are dogs. A dog, and there's one. It's a cow. It's from the skull. It's the palatine suture on the ridge of a cow skull.
Where did you get that?
A dead cow.
I think he just picked up some cow skull and
just mashed it up.
But the interesting thing, I mean, one reason it's possible to identify, oh, this came from a cow, is because they didn't pulverize or process what few cremains they actually did send back. They didn't. They weren't as finely crushed as a reputable crematorium does.
And that is something. We're talking with Dr. Bill Bass and John Jefferson, authors of the new novel, the Body Farm novel, The Devil's Bones. And it does take us through, your book does take us through the process of cremation, which has been a mystery to many of us. And to actually hear it step by step as Dr. Brockton goes down and observes cremations here in Knoxville in the story, it takes us through the whole process about how, you know, the average person thinks, okay, well, the body goes in the crematorium and comes out as a bag of ashes, when in fact, that's not how it works at all, is it?
No, it's not.
Maybe you could take us through the cremation process.
Okay, well, a body goes in. They do not like to place a body in the crematory oven in a body bag or something like that, because by that time, the body will bend, and so they prefer to use a crematory box, which is has either a plywood or press board bottom that's to keep the thing from sagging.
Yeah.
The sides are cardboard. The top is cardboard.
It's like a big, I'll say shoebox with a wooden bottom.
It's a big shoebox with a wooden bottom.
Okay.
Exactly. That's a great example.
All right.
Then when the body is cremated, as the fire is over, you can look in the crematory oven and identify most of the bones in the body. I mean,
So it looks like a skeleton?
That's right.
Okay.
You will see a skeleton, and the bones will retain their anatomical shapes. Now, what they do then is to rake the bones out.
Mm-hmm.
And since we have so many orthopedic devices in the body now, they don't want to put these things. They have what's called a pulverizer, which is essentially it's an industrial-sized kitchen blender.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about a 5-gallon bucket, and you put the bones in there, and the manufacturer guarantees ashes in 60 seconds. And
when someone takes their loved one's ashes up to the Smoky Mountains to sprinkle them, which, and I believe you need a permit for that, if I'm not mistaken, they are not really ashes. It's more bone dust, what do you call it? I guess you call
it. Well, it's the ground up pieces of bone and teeth.
Okay.
There are other things in there. For example, the last two cremations I've looked at in, just say, the last 2 months, we've been able to make positive identifications of the individual.
Because the pieces were big enough?
Because they both had dental appliances that when they went through the crematory process, enough of the dental appliance came through that you could identify. Let me give you an example. One man had a missing tooth. And so what the dentist did was to put a bridge in. You put a false tooth, and then you have a bridge to hold that tooth in, but that bridge has abutments. It's like a bridge, and it has an abutment into the tooth before it and the tooth behind it. And you can pick up, when you go through these things really carefully, you can pick up this tooth cap or crown, and you can pick up the solder joints on it. And the solder joints match, and I could tell exactly from looking at the dental record and looking at the x-ray of the two individuals I could tell exactly who each one of them was.
And in the case of Chigger Hardin, of course, his body came back from Georgia, and the clothes matched the photograph that the family had of what he was buried in. Mm-hmm. The bullet, of course, by the time he went through the cremation furnace, was melted.
And
we actually didn't see the bullet. We were looking through the material after it went through the pulverizer and did not find the bullet. But then we took two bags, separated the material into two Ziploc bags, took them over and had them x-rayed. And sure enough, in one of the x-rays, there's this disc of melted lead. You would think that would be easy to spot, but it wasn't.
Oh, that's amazing.
John and I make a dynamic duo.
John Jefferson, Dr. Bill Bass. Jefferson Bass is the writing team. The Devil's Bones is the latest book. I've been reading, we talk about cremation a bit here, and I've been reading recently in the newspaper about the trend for the green funeral. I think the quote in the paper was that this is even better now than cremation for people who are really super environmentally friendly. They want to be buried in a biodegradable coffin in a shallow grave and all these things. And I'm not so sure that that's environmentally friendly, because from what I understand by reading your books and by looking at your website, jeffersonbass.com, the body leaves quite a mess when it decomposes and kills the vegetation around it. I don't think it's a very green process, is it?
Well,
and by green meaning eco-friendly.
Well, that's true. And you can tell from these are the volatile fatty acids that leach out of a body when mm-hmm. a body dies. It's the liquefaction of the soft tissue.
Okay.
And, but they're saying that the earth is big enough it will absorb that, is what they're trying to tell you.
So, because this is you see this article here from USA Today from about a month or two ago, and I saved it. It's just talking about, bury me in a cardboard box in a shallow grave. Yet somewhere else I was reading that, one of the greatest advances in humankind and human health and sanitation was when people started getting buried deeper, not shallower. And I thought, I have a problem with the whole green funeral idea.
Well, you last longer if you bury it deeper too, because it's cooler.
Okay.
Of course, the bugs and the buzzards would argue that the most friendly thing to do would be to just chuck us out on the ground,
Like at the body farm.
That's right.
At the University of Tennessee. I know another article I found was about a North Carolina man who was just at the airport and opened up the suitcase and someone stole the remains. Why would you steal? Someone's got his son's remains stolen from him at an airport. I'm baffled by that, too. I guess they probably thought it was something more valuable.
Now, were they cremated remains or?
Yeah, stole the cremated. A North Carolina man visiting Central Florida said that someone at Orlando International Airport opened up his suitcase and stole the cremated remains of his son.
They didn't steal the whole suitcase.
They stole the small white box containing the son's ashes.
Huh.
They probably thought it was valuable, I guess. And then
they thought it was cocaine and they've been sniffing.
The next book.
There we go. That's right. Right. Yes. Forensic Anthropology meets Miami Vice.
Dr. Bill Brockton travels to Florida and solves the case of the snorted cremain.
Where do we go from there?
Well, let's get back to the book. Let's get back to the book, The Devil's Bones, because it is about the case of the subplot, I guess, is the Georgia crematorium that happens. But more specifically, there are cases set right here on Middlebrook Pike, just around the corner from the radio studios here, where there's someone trying to fake a death, because the person is dead. How would you describe that? Trying to
conceal evidence of a murder, it look as if it's an accidental mm-hmm. death in a car fire.
And you've had real life experience with cases like that too, where examine burnt bodies.
A lot of the stuff that's in there now. The Devil's Bones is based upon really two cases that we have dealt with. It's based upon a lot of cases, but experience from a lot of cases, but there are two cases in particular that have led to the background of this book.
Okay. Well, and those cases are?
One in Kingsport of a man from Virginia who bought a house and was remodeling it, and he hired two people to help him remodel a house. He didn't hire the most savory characters in the world, and they did him in. Then there's a really interesting sequence of events that occurred that we were able to figure out scientifically when we excavated the house, what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And that's brought into this book.
Okay. And
this was a guy. After he was shot, his body was dynamited.
The first thing they did, they had two Dobermans. The bad guys had two Dobermans. Let the Dobermans all night to eat him. Well, they came back the next morning, and they were wagging their tails. They haven't eaten him, but they weren't hungry enough to eat him.
It's not like you're throwing a guy to the sharks in the Everglades, Gators, rather.
And what's plan B, you know? And so, we got to get rid of him. So they decided what they would do is to blow him up and burn the house down. Well, now, if you're in – this was a ranch house with a full basement. If you were up on the first floor and the – house burns and you fall through into the basement, there's going to be debris between you and the basement floor.
Because
the fire's burning, it's down there, and then you fall on top of that. When we excavated this body, this individual is literally cooked to the concrete floor. If you burn something in the kitchen and you burn it on, you sear it onto the pan, you can do this with bodies in houses, so long as it's not a wood floor. And there's no debris between him and the floor, and we literally had to scrape him off the floor because he was cooked onto the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then we only found the upper portion. The first part we found was only the upper portion. I'm sorry, we found the lower portion without the arms and the skull.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you got to explain that. We know he didn't fall through. How do you separate a body?
Yeah.
Well, I said, I think this man was blown up. And the deputy standing there watching us rake away in the house said, "That's interesting." So the neighbor said there was an explosion in his house just before it burned.
They could have maybe mentioned that earlier.
That's right.
But see, it looks more impressive,
Bass over here
we
is.
Able to figure it out.
That's right.
The book is very exciting. The Devil's Bones. There's action. There's adventure. I don't want to give away too much of the plot because you kind of have had to have read, especially read the second in the series, to continue the story along.
This does build. Yeah, we're finishing some things up in this book that we started before.
And goes back to the first book also to recur some characters there. The only gripe I have is that the book jacket gives away just one little bit too much.
Yeah. You always hope that's not going to happen.
But it's like a trailer for a movie.
Right.
That's the way it is.
So we can warn people, if you don't want to have some things given away, don't read the jacket.
Yeah. I mean, just stop short. Read the first two paragraphs and then just stop.
Yeah.
Because it just gives one... But I still found the book incredibly enjoyable, and it made me think that you guys have to start thinking about who's going to play Dr. Bill Brockton in the movie or TV version. Who would you want to play you?
Well, that's been discussed. my wife, whom you know,
yes,
says that there is nobody left after John Wayne died. So.
But see, I don't think John Wayne would have been good because I don't think he's funny enough. I think Harrison Ford would be great because he's smart and he's funny. He's got a good heart.
Because this book, I mean, this is the highest compliment. This book reads like a movie.
Yeah,
it's very exciting, and you can picture all the action and excitement taking place.
Does broadcast get out to Hollywood?
I'll send it to him.
Yeah.
I have no problem with that. And one other thing I noticed, obviously, what I love are the many Knoxville references in the book. I can picture, as you're driving out Middlebrook Pike to go to the farm where one of these other murders occurred that's faked to look like a not murder. I have to think that's got to be somewhere in this general vicinity of where we're talking right now, the farm house that you're describing.
Yeah, it's a little, it's up close to, it's up just before Middlebrook Pike goes under 640.
Okay.
It's a beautiful farm. I mean, I haven't been past there lately. It could be a subdivision by now. but I've passed it many times in the past. And I actually looked at it from satellite photos and Google Earth and on. And it's a beautiful piece of land. And I hope whoever owns it doesn't get mad that I've appropriated it for the scene of a murder.
What kind of research, John Jefferson, when you're writing these body farm books with Dr. Bass, do you have to do? You mentioned Google Earth. You mentioned, I know when you did the first book, you went to a cockfight. out in Newport or somewhere.
Shh, 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 shh.
Oh. Some one of you, so maybe you saw pictures of a cockfight to write about in the book. What experiments did you have to do? What additional research besides eating at every fast food restaurant in East Tennessee, which is mentioned in this book?
Right. Well, I mean, obviously, the most important research is to talk to Dr. Bass. Mm-hmm. And learn as much as I can about cremation. Actually, he did a lot of research as part of these Noble Georgia cremation cases out at a crematorium in Alcoa, which is actually, I mean, I've just lifted from life. Mm-hmm. East Tennessee Cremation, the woman who runs that crematorium, Helen Taylor, she graciously let me use her real name in the book.
So that's two. Now you've got Art Bohannon, the police detective, real name, and now Helen is another one.
And then Roger Noe, the man who talks about the homeless. Roger Noe.
Yes.
Of retired UT faculty,
and that was fascinating to me also because I go down to the old city frequently, and I've seen the mission set up and do the meals for the homeless that is described so beautifully in the book.
Oh,
too.
that service every Wednesday night that's under the viaduct. It's just amazing.
Yeah,
I went with Roger Noe, who taught social work at UT for many years, and who's now with the public defender's office, and just to see, this crew of volunteers, more than 100 volunteers, whip out all these chairs and tables and set up all these different lines in the matter of minutes. And then to see these hundreds of people materialize, from the sidewalks and the bushes and go through the food lines and the clothing lines in the space of an hour, it was astonishing.
And that's one thing. This book gives a great picture of East Tennessee, too. I mean, sure, it's through the body farm, and because that's we're all interested in that and the experiments that you do. But when you get into these other sidelights of things, I mean, something as simple as sitting in the drive-through window. There's a scene where Dr. Brockton is going to pick up his lunch or dinner at one of the fast food drive-ins, and he's sitting there at the window, and can't figure out why his food isn't coming, and then he realizes he's at the wrong window. And I think that had to have happened to one of you. John Jefferson has a very, very guilty look
on
his face.
On the way
right
back
now.
From the cockfight I didn't go to. Yeah.
The new book, The Devil's Bones, is released on Tuesday at bookstores everywhere. And Dr. Bass and John Jefferson do have a book signing event Tuesday evening. And where is that going to be?
We're doing that at the Borders at Turkey Creek.
Okay, that's a nice big bookstore.
Yeah.
And several more events over the course of the next couple of weeks. You can check the website, jeffersonbass.com. And, John, maybe you can run through the list of them, too, because I know you've got an event at the McClung Museum.
Yeah, that was the one I was going to mention, because that would be a chance. We're doing a talk there, but that would give people a chance to see that forensic anthropology exhibit. That is Sunday, February 17th.
Okay.
We're doing a talk at 2.
So we got 2 weeks from now for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
But then, we're also, we're doing things at Hargraves Books, the Club LeConte Book Club, Books a Million in Oak Ridge. Carpe Librum on Kingston Pike.
So there are ample opportunities to meet the authors and get your copy of the book signed.
You sure thing.
All right.
Johnson City, Chattanooga, Nashville.
How much traveling do you still do for these? I mean, that's got to be a drag.
Well, we've kind of
unless there's a big bopper or somebody who wants to get exhumed along the path, that you want to. Oh, Dr. Bass, while you're signing books, would you mind digging somebody up for us?
I'm getting to the stage where I don't like to fly anymore. Age is catching up with me.
Yeah,
and so John does the flying and I do the driving, to speak. But we have a loop that goes to Nashville and back. We have a loop to Chattanooga and that area, and we have a loop going to Indiana and Ohio this time.
When you do book signings for these books, how many of your former students show up and just say, "Oh, Dr. Bass,"
lots of them.
Oh, I can't tell you how many times we've been signing books and someone will come up and say, "Dr. Bass, I had you in 1970, whatever, 1980, whatever. You're the reason I became a physician, or you're the reason that I went into law enforcement, or you're the reason I did this or that." I mean, so many people, say you were the most important professor, or the best professor, or the most fascinating professor I ever had. And it's just, for me, it's just really humbling
Well, he's your professor, too, though.
Well, he
now,
is. Yeah, I've actually had the, you know, probably as long a course with him as anybody. And it's been great. It's been fabulous.
Well, you've got this great trilogy of books, you know, with Carved in Bone, Flesh and Bone, and The Devil's Bones. What does the future hold for the fictional Dr. Brockton? Are there more books on the horizon?
Well, we signed a contract to do 5 in the Body Farm novel series. So there are 2 more.
Mm-hmm.
John might want to mention the 4th one. We think we know where that's going to occur.
Yeah, that one, actually, a lot of that's going to be set in Oak Ridge.
Oh, terrific.
And there's going to be, I don't want to say too much.
Of course, yeah.
Because
otherwise, why would I have you back next year to talk about it?
There's a historical backstory. I mean, there's both a modern mystery and a World War II era Manhattan Project mystery.
Oh, that'll be great.
Because Oak Ridge, I mean, that piece of East Tennessee history is so fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be a little bit different.
See if I can guess the title, The Glowing Bones, The Radioactive Bones, The
Hot to the Bone.
Yeah, I'll start working on that. Yeah. Try to see if I can guess what the next title is going to be.
Yeah, well, maybe you can suggest it.
All right.
Yeah. Best title suggestion gets a free, 6-pack of beer or Coke or, dinner at a fast food restaurant.
At one of the fast food restaurants that you visited in the book.
That's right. You're
interested in the real science behind the novel, there's also 2 nonfiction books that Dr. Bass and John Jefferson put together. The one that came out several years back, Death's Acre, and then the newer book, which is Beyond the Body Farm, which came out last fall.
Yeah,
that's right. Mm-hmm.
And the difference being that Death's Acre is really more about the facility right here in Knoxville, and Beyond the Body Farm takes that science and you travel to, like, for example, I mentioned the Big Bopper exhumation.
The theory behind Beyond the Body Farm is that these are kind of cold cases, if you want to call them that, cases that have taken 20, 30 years to solve. And the theory behind Beyond the Body Farm is how have the techniques and technology in forensics changed over a generation, so to speak.
Over your generation,
over
my generation, just in your career.
You see, I mean, there was no DNA when I first started.
Mm-hmm. Is that the biggest, it's got to be the biggest difference in your lifetime?
I don't know. We, we get into sonar and we get into things like that. I mean, the sonar for locating bodies in the 1950s and 60s probably didn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you probably know more of that than I do.
Well, and then UT, the anthropology department, has developed computer modeling or computer software that can look at a bone that's been found somewhere, and based on the huge database they've built, can say this came from a male or a female. They're black or they're white or they're Asian or even more specifically Japanese or Chinese, and they were probably this tall.
Mm-hmm.
That computer software is now being used all over the world.
And to mention that again, identifying the bones, you do get a visual representation of that if you're able to stop by the McClung Museum through early May and check out the forensic anthropology exhibit there. I went down and immediately saw the sign that says, warning, this exhibit not suitable for small children. And I went rushing right in, of course.
Of course. Yeah, that's the best way to get people to want to see something is to say this is inappropriate material. Yeah.
But it is fascinating. There are a set of full-color, large pictures that show, not only day by day, but half day by half day, a body decomposing naturally.
Decomposing in the summer.
At the body farm, which so many people must ask you to see all the time. And now it's right there at the museum.
That's right.
All right. Dr. Bill Bass, John Jefferson, the book, the new book, The Devil's Bones, available everywhere on Tuesday, including the big signing Tuesday night.
Borders at Turkey Creek.
Any other signings you want to mention? We've got about a minute to go.
John is looking, let me tell you that this is Super Tuesday, and we have a super book coming out on Super Tuesday.
So. Oh, that's right. You do have a little competition on Tuesday. So vote for Jefferson Bass.
We'll be in Oak Ridge on Thursday the 7th at mm-hmm. Books-A-Million at 6:30.
And then the following week, there's some as well.
That's right. Let's see. Mm-hmm. We're Carpe Librum, Sunday, February the 10th at 2.
A week from today.
That's right. Let's see. Then we're going up to Lexington, Kentucky on February the 13th. The big Valentine's Day. Nothing says
I hope you bring in your wife.
You.
I hope you bring your wife on that trip at least.
And in the McClung Museum is the 17th.
And that's another big one too, where you get a lot of people from here in East Tennessee.
Sure, sure.
Again, guys, I hope you'll come back every time you have a new book. We appreciate the time just flies by. I can't believe it's been
well.
Half
you're
an hour
always
already.
Our most prepared interviewer. You're our best
you
interviewer.
Are, you yeah, are yeah. excellent. Yeah.
Well, you're kind. I'll make sure not to edit that part out.
All right. And just you can give us both the $20 bills afterwards.
That part I will edit out. Again, Dr. Bill Bass, John Jefferson, The Devil's Bones, on sale Tuesday. This is the East Tennessee Report, a public affairs program of the Journal Broadcast Group. My name is Frank Murphy. We'll talk to you again next Sunday.